Chapter 4. Four Brothers. 5 days after his meeting with Loken, Russ was in his lair, poring over blueprint flimsies of the vengeful spirit. He had them laid out all over the floor, and he squatted in the middle, one hand curled around his chin. The flimsies covered the fur rugs. They butted against the furniture. They waved in the heat draft of the fireballs. Their edges were weighted with bones and empty wooden bowls, still dirty with past meals. Data slates bearing information regarding the vengeful spirit's capabilities and past actions glowed on the floor. A miniature light sculpture of Horus's ship spun slowly over the projection lens of a portable hololith. On a bronze table sat a meter-long scale model of the ship, several of the segments removed to show the internal layout. Over its carefully machined components of brass, steel, and bone, Russ had daubed red runes, marking out the damaged sections described to him by Braw. Luminous strips of sticky paper showed the path of the knight's errant and denoted important targets. The damage runes were prolific. The war was wearing on. The vengeful spirit had had as little time as the Hrafnikel to refit. That was a small equalizing factor in his favor. Freki and Geri's breathing thrummed the air with restful infrasound, aiding the Primarch's concentration. Their presence comforted him. The smell of a Fenrisian wolf was the smell of home, hot, animal, primal. They were fragments of the homeworld's savagery let loose among the stars. A childhood on Fenris robbed the galaxy of wonder. There was no other place so well provisioned with monsters. It was a dream world that straddled the boundaries of myth. Everywhere else was dull by comparison. Russ enjoyed the challenge before him. The complexities of attacking an enemy flagship protected by a large fleet took his mind from the probable result of his mission. Horus was more than likely to kill him. Even if the attack were successful, his legion would be shattered. Neither of these probabilities dissuaded him. Horus had failed in his role as Emperor's War Master. Russ would not shirk from his duty as executioner. The clear note of a carinx rang out from the door to his chambers. Russ stood and arched his back, stretching out his muscles. He had spent too long in one position.
"Enter!"
he called. The door rolled aside. Grimnir Blackblood stood in the entrance. He slammed his fist against his chest in salute.
"My Jarl," he said, "I have an urgent message from the Far Torkus."
Grimnir held out a sealed message tube.
"Bring it here," said Russ.
Grimnir picked his way through the plans covering the Primarch's chamber, no mean feat in full power armor. Geri looked up lazily. His head thumped back to the floor when he saw who had come. Within two breaths, he was snoring again. Russ took the tube and tore off the crimped lead seals. He tipped out the rolled paper inside. He made a noise in his throat as he read.
"Good tidings or bad?"
"Good," said Russ. "My brother Sanguinius has entered the solar system. There is to be a welcome, and then a council."
He rolled up the paper and tapped it back into the tube with the palm of his hand.
"They're not going to like what I have to tell them. You've made it clear since the beginning you intended to go after Horus."
"No one assumes I have changed my mind. He is dogged that way. He won't accept I haven't."
"Perhaps you should send a message ahead, outlining your plans. Take the sting out of our leaving."
Russ laughed sadly.
"Spoil my chance for a little drama. You must think more boldly, my son. Consider how the sagas will remember you. I shall make the Skald's task easier by adding a little tension to the story of my thread. Inform my blade makers and armorers."
"You will go armored?"
Russ nodded.
"My panoply should look at its best. Appearances matter in circumstances like this."
"At once, my Jarl."
Russ sniffed, and looked over his shoulder to where the Emperor's spear leaned in a weapons rack.
"I better take that bloody thing with me," he said. "Find someone willing to polish it. I do not wish to disappoint my father if he decides to show his face."
The ships of the Blood Angels sailed into Terran high orbit, escorted by craft of the Imperial Fists. From their broadsides, Dawn's fleet cast out an endless stream of pyrotechnics, showering the red ships of the Ninth Legion in bursts of light. The celebratory display did little to hide the realities of war. Sanguinius's flotilla was storm-racked and battle-worn. Many of his craft had not made it to Terra. Very few of those that had were intact. Black scoring marred their livery. The burned-out cavities of voided decks riddled their skins. In this, they were like the ships of Sanguinius's brothers. They were all living on borrowed time. Sites of damage were kept from the populace at large. Where the ships were subject to picked documentary, they were shot from flattering angles and their wounds touched up by vidcast painters. Sanguinius's fleet put into anchor, the most heavily damaged towed by void tug to the few free dry docks. With many of the Jovian shipyards destroyed by Kelbor Hal, and Mars's ring of iron inaccessible on the other side of the blockade, Terra's more modest facilities were oversubscribed. Pictors captured Sanguinius's descent from the heavens and broadcast it around the system. Flights of red-liveried gunships roared down through the layered smogs of humanity's birthplace, flying in formation over dry seabeds and the hives of worn-out continents. War-weary men and women looked skywards and felt their hearts lift as the Lord of Angels cut across the yellow sky. That was all they saw of the Emperor's most perfect son. Like a true angel, Sanguinius soared high over the lives of mortals without once noticing them. His feet never touched Terra's common soil. He flew directly for Himalaya and the Imperial Palace at the top of the world. The Blood Angels approached the palace in perfect formation. Four Thunderhawks and a Stormbird touched down upon a landing platform extending from the inside of a tower near the Heavenward Gate. The remainder peeled away and made for the landing fields of the Lionsgate spaceport. The streets were thronged by the menials of 1,000 palace organizations. Bells rang in acclamation. Floating servo skulls and other less honored drones buzzed overhead. The cheers of 1,000,000 people were a constant noise. Flights of atmospheric craft screamed across the sky, dropping bombs of colored smoke. Hololiths filled the air with celebratory images. Fireworks boomed and crackled over the domes and spires of the palace. The Blood Angels' lead craft set down in a fan, the Stormbird at the center, their noses pointing towards the group who had come to greet the Primarch. By a large open armored gate, Rogal Dorn, Leman Russ, Jagatai Khan, Malkador the Sigilite, and the assembled leaders of the Imperial Defense Forces waited for the returned Lord of Angels. Heavily modified magi from the newly formed Adeptus Mechanicus waited with decorated generals of the Solar Auxilia, Titan Princeps, and a myriad others. The Lords of the Councils of Terra attended, if their duties allowed. The few absent had sent high-ranked deputies in their place and primed them with elaborate apologies. Doors opened in the gunships. From them, Blood Angels leapt and ran onto the platform. Warriors in gold and red formed an honor guard for their lord. As soon as they were arrayed, the Stormbird dropped its ramp, and Sanguinius walked out. He made straight for his brothers, his pace hurried. The winds of the covered mountains ruffled the feathers of his wings. Rogal Dorn reached out and clasped the arm of the Blood Angels' Primarch.
"We are most pleased to greet you, our brother."
Once, Sanguinius had had a radiant smile whose beauty pierced the heart. It carried only sorrow now. His eye sockets were purpled, his gaze haunted. "My journey has been too long and fraught with unimaginable horror. I am glad to be here at last." Sanguinius glanced over the crowd. Father is not here. Where is he? I could not sense him.
Your father wishes you to know he is overjoyed at your return, said Malkador.
Where is the Emperor? Asked Sanguinius. Of all the Primarchs, he was the most beautiful. Mortal men wept to look upon his image. A live feed of his arrival was shown all over the palace. Cheers turned to moans of adulation.
It is a long story, said the Khan. One without a resolution, said Russ archly. Though some might know more than others.
He looked meaningfully at Dorn and Malkador.
He is unavailable, and labours in the Imperial dungeon, said Malkador. But know that he works as strenuously as the rest of us to bring Horus's rebellion to an end.
Sensing something amiss, Sanguinius did not press the matter. Dorn nodded behind him, and the assembly of dignitaries dispersed, leaving the Primarchs with the regent on the landing pad.
There are refreshments for your legionaries, said Malkador, but we must talk now. I apologize, you shall have no time to rest.
Sanguinius nodded.
We must. Much has occurred. Much that is troubling.
More troubling than Horus's rebellion, said Russ.
Sanguinius gave Russ a cold stare, the stare of a dead man.
You have no idea, Lehman, said Sanguinius.
He blinked, and the dread his words conveyed blew away on the wind.
Is the Emperor well?
Asked Sanguinius.
Tell me that at least. We thought him dead, Gilliman, the Lion and I, until the storm parted and we saw that the Astronomicon still burned. I expected to see him here.
He is alive, said Dorn. You will have to take that on faith, brother.
Sanguinius looked out over the city-sized palace, where the celebration of his arrival continued.
Is it not dangerous, this level of joy? We mislead the people. We are a long way from victory.
Malkador leaned on his staff, his white leonine mane streaming behind him.
Your return to us is a source of genuine happiness, he said.
It is hollow theatre. I've had enough of pomp, said the great angel.
He appeared exhausted, looking on all he saw from a distant place.
Theatre is necessary, said Malkador. The hearts of men must be fired with joy to burn away despair.
Despair will only be overthrown by victory, said Sanguinius.
Indeed,
said Malkador. He let go of his staff with one hand and gestured through the gate.
Then let us speak.
The five most powerful men on Terra passed inside the tower. Adamantium gates closed soundlessly, sealing out the jubilation of the crowds. They retired to private chambers, warded by every technological and arcane art known to man. Silent, adeptus custodes set a guard on the outside. Within, Sanguinius told his tale. He did not tell them everything. He could not. How could an angel put into words the temptations of chaos? Twice he had been enticed to betray his father. Twice it had been intimated to him that it was he, not Horus, who was the favoured vessel for chaos's power. In the eyes of others, he was an angel. In his own mind, his wings were the surest sign of chaos's touch. But he would not fall. So he glossed over the temptations of Kar-Banda and Kyrus at Cygnus Prime, and the attempts of Mardale at Davin to make him into something more terrible than the War Master. The existence of Imperium Secundus he kept to himself. Gilliman's motives in establishing the Second Realm were pure, but they could so easily be read as treachery, and his own role of Emperor of that short-lived empire he wished to forget. He had too many secrets, and though he would have gladly unburdened himself to his father, he was not willing to take the same risk with his brothers and Malkador. He felt the old Psyker's powerful mind probing at his own as he spoke, scratching at the veracity of his words to see if falsehood lay beneath. Sanguinius had enough psychic might of his own to deflect the regent, though resistance alone would be more than enough to rouse the old man's suspicion. He told them everything else. In a quiet voice, he revealed to them the true might of the Neverborn and the sorceries they deployed. He spoke of rains of blood and planets caged in bone. He disbelieved half of what he said, though he had seen it all with his own eyes.
"Such things they can do," he said, "as make Magnus's mightiest works seem parlour tricks."
He told them of the Shadow Crusade, where Lorgar and the transformed Angron had laid waste to dozens of worlds, of Conrad Kurz's reign of terror on Macragge, of his own conversations with their tormented brother. He let his sympathy show for the Night Haunter, for that was genuine. He told them of the assault on the Pharos, of the mission to Davin, and the hellish transformation wrought upon that world. And finally, of how he, the Lion, and Gilliman had destroyed the site of Horus's corruption, and how in doing so they had brought about the calming of the ruin storm, and the horrors that travelling through the warp presented in this strange new age. To all but Malkador, Sanguinius looked distracted, as if he had larger matters to ponder. Only the Imperial Regent could fathom how large the secrets were that he kept, and his shrewd eyes stayed fixed on the Primarch's face the entire time that he spoke. By the time Sanguinius had finished relating his tale, and his brothers had asked him their questions, it was late evening. High levels of atmospheric pollution rendered the sunsets of Terror gloriously colourful. The tower room where they talked was saturated in deep orange light. Conversation turned inevitably to what should be done next. Dawn activated a hololith depicting the whole wheel of the galaxy. Sunlight streamed through it, staining the stars bloody.
"This is our disposition," said Dawn. "Here, at Terra, we now have four legions. The Lion pursues his policy of vengeance. Gilliman harries the traitors as he advances upon Terra."
"He should have come directly," said Jagatai. "Swift movement wins battles."
"He thought it better one legion got through rather than none," said Sanguinius. "Between them, the Lion and Gilliman have split the traitors' forces. We will have fewer enemy to face when Horus's hammer blow falls. Lionel Johnson bleeds his strength. Gilliman pushes him on towards us. Their diversions allowed me through. We are at last in a position to dictate the course of the war. We can win."
"We are also split," said the Khan. "Six legions could have been here."
"They outnumber us greatly," said Sanguinius. "Dividing their forces was the wisest action. They cannot be allowed to bring their full might to bear here."
Dawn nodded.
"Sanguinius is right. The Lion's campaign will buy us time, and Gilliman's activities give us the precious gift of choosing our own timing."
"How much time?" said the Khan.
"It doesn't matter how much time we gain," said Russ. "It isn't enough. We have seen Sanguinius's ships, the Khan's."
Russ drank deeply of his wine.
"Mine. Our fleets are depleted. Mars is in open revolt. We do not have time, brothers. Horus still has two choices. He can attack us here and smash what little remains of our strength, or wear us down by slow degree until there is nothing left. Either way, he wins."
"The angel and the wolf are more similar than they appear," thought Sanguinius. "I am refined on the surface and savage within. Russ is the opposite. How many mirrorings like these did the Emperor engineer into his sons? And why?"
He thought of Kurz, another darker reflection of himself.
"Well, that was true a few weeks ago," said Dawn. "His hand is forced. Thanks to the actions of our brothers, the ruin storm is blowing out. Now we can muster our strength, he will attack directly. He will wish to lay siege to Terra before Gilliman can bring his warriors here from Ultramar. With the Lion laying waste to the traitor's domains, his own ability to reinforce will be compromised. There will be no attrition now. We are engaged in a race."
"Gilliman's legion is largely intact,"
said Sanguinius, and he can call upon the full might of the 500 worlds. Lorgar and Angron wrought havoc there, but Gilliman's realm is large and well organized. His is the largest legion. Horus's forces have all suffered losses, many of them self-inflicted. Do not overestimate their strength. Horus will move against us soon, when he does not wish to.
I do not doubt it, said Russ. Still, we have no opportunity to replenish our fleets. We are not ready to bear the brunt of an assault on Terra. Alpharius's incursion should have taught us that.
A muscle twinge at the line of Dawn's silver hair betrayed his annoyance at Russ's statement.
You are also correct. We do need to strike back, said Dawn. Now we have provoked him, we have to slow the War Master. If fortune is with us, we might even stop him before he gets to Terra. We can decide this strategy. It is now the War Master who must react, and not us.
Facing him before our forces are gathered will cost a lot of blood, said Russ.
Where do you propose we make this stand? Said the Khan. We have so many Titans here, said Dawn. We cannot unleash them upon Terra. Their kind of war would be the undoing of the throne world. My intention is to hold Horus at Beta Garmon.
The system in question blinked. The hololith zoomed into it at a gesture from Dawn. He pointed at it with his calloused craftsman's hand.
7 major warp routes cross here. It has been contested since the beginning of the war. If we commit the majority of our forces to Beta Garmon, we can hold Horus and our traitorous brothers there.
And grind them out like cinders, said Sanguinius.
I do not see a better proposition. Russ shook his head.
It brings us back to attrition. They have the numbers. If we cannot best Horus quickly there, he will overcome us. Once Beta Garmon is lost, the way to Terra is open. What will we defend ourselves with then?
This kind of defensive war is your preference, Rogel, said the Khan. But it is not to my liking. We risk becoming ensnared there. There are other routes to Terra. He could hold our forces in place at Beta Garmon and outflank us.
Our hunting brother is right, said Russ. Beta Garmon is a hell trap, and one that will too easily divide our forces, for must we not retain a portion of our strength here to fortify Terra? Fight him there, we are divided. Fight him here, he has time to gather his strength. Horus has us outmaneuvered. Any battle at Beta Garmon will be bloody, there is no doubt of that, said Dawn. The casualty figures I have projected are high, but they are bearable, and they will give us more time to fortify Terra. Gilliman will come from the galactic southeast and trap Horus either at Beta Garmon or, if he breaks through, against the wall of iron I have cast about this world.
Russ set down his goblet.
You are forgetting something.
What am I forgetting, Lehman? Said Dawn.
We are assuming that Horus intends to strike with his full might at Terra. Why should he do so? If I were Horus, I would set the Iron Warriors to guard my back. The warp, though passable, is in turmoil. Horus still has a strategic advantage in travel speed. You can be assured he will not waste it. He need only delay Gilliman for a short time, not confront him head-on, and he will be able to bring overwhelming force against Beta Garmon, then Terra, destroying our armies piece by piece.
It is plausible, probable even, but I doubt the War Master anticipated the destruction of Davin, said Dawn. Reinforcements arrive from all over the Imperium every day, and now the storm abates, they come more quickly. We have access to the astrotelepathic network again, and so we exert greater control over loyalist factions. At Beta Garmon and at Terra, Horus will face far larger armies than he expected. He will know this, he will rush, and he will make errors. This is the race to see who will be ready soonest.
To rely on armies one does not have yet is to rely on the wind, said Jagatai.
You never know which way it will blow.
Aye. That is why he will run for Terra as quickly as he can, said Russ. We do not have time to reinforce either system sufficiently. I think I already said that.
He poured more wine from a tall ewer and drank it down in one.
That is why we need to whittle him down while we can, Russ. I suggest you make for Acanto Miphos, where you will find large concentrations of the Alpha Legion. I am sure you would welcome the chance to tackle them again. Surely you would wish to have your vengeance upon them?
I would, said Russ. They would never pay Weir Guild, would they?
He smiled.
So they must die.
I know you too well to take that as an agreement, said Dorn.
It is not, admitted Russ. Do you know what I think?
You are going to tell me, said Dorn wearily.
Russ leaned forwards and gripped his knees. The Khan watched their exchange with interest.
It will not work.
This is the best course of action. Divide, hold, reinforce, pin him between our armies here and Gilliman's 13th, insisted Dorn.
If we are talking about defence, then maybe it is, said Russ. And in defending, we will come close to victory, and we will fail at the last.
Dorn gripped his stylus tightly.
Then what would you do?
Russ sighed in regret.
I will not be joining this effort at Beta Garmon you have planned, my brother. I have business of my own to settle with the War Master, and I will do so in person.
Dorn glared at him.
Explain yourself.
Do I need to? I made my intentions known the moment I arrived here. The time has come. I'm taking my warriors and I am leaving, said Russ. Can I make it clearer for you, Praetorian?
I am the Emperor's executioner. I will perform my duties. I never said otherwise. I thought you would see sense.
Oh, if that is sense, then no, I have yet to glimpse it.
Have you heard the rumours about what has happened to Horus? Said Dorn. He will kill you, and you will lose us this war.
He has grown powerful, my brother, said the Khan.
If Jagatai cautions you, then you should listen, said Sanguinius. Of all of us, he is most akin to you in mind.
Jagatai must follow his own path.
As I must follow mine, said Russ.
And my path leads me to the War Master. That is my weird, as it always was. Nothing has changed.
Everything has changed. You cannot kill him alone, said Dorn. You are throwing your life and your legion away. This is madness.
Russ tapped his chest with his armored hand.
My life. My legion. I will return to Fenris, where my priests will question the spirit of my world and learn Horus's vulnerability. He will have one. Every monster does. I will exploit it, and I will strike him down before he comes within a light year of Terra.
Dorn snorted.
You think me a fool, brother? Said Russ with dangerous innocence.
I think you are reckless. I think you are in danger of treading the same road as Magnus, of Lorgar, cavorting with priests. Where has your conviction gone? Where is the wolf who spoke at Nicaea?
This stung Russ, and his smile dropped.
Nicaea was another trick, another manipulation. Why do you think our enemies duped us into abandoning the Librarius? Why do you think I was tricked into killing Magnus?
You express regret for that now, said Dorn. Last I heard, you were crowing about it.
I have crowed. I do crow. I am proud of what I did. When attacked, Magnus resorted to powers he should never have unleashed, and he deserved what he got for that alone. But things could have been different. Horus lied to me because they fear the power of the warp. He feared Magnus's sorcery. It is what the enemy are. It is what will beat them.
Dorn sighed sadly, and looked down at his slate of plans.
"And that is Magnus talking."
Sanguinius roused himself from his miserable introspection.
"Do you believe you were wrong at Nicaea, Lehman?"
"Perhaps," said Russ honestly. "But I was not wrong to call for Magnus's sanction. Nor was I wrong to call for the suppression of the Librarius as it was. Who knows where Magnus's path would have led had he been let alone? He might have won the war. But would we then have had another Horus to contend with? Or maybe two? The Librarius could have proven as poisonous as the thrice-damned Logis.
The great proponent of the Nicaean Edict who kept his own sorcerers. You have many qualities, my brother, said Dorn. I never thought to say hypocrisy was one.
Is it? The priests of my legion and the storm seers of Jagatai's are different to the librarians that were. Our warriors draw on an older tradition, a limited tradition. Magnus did not believe in limits. That was his error.
Similar traditions are outlawed by our father on every world, said Dorn hotly.
We have seen where his close-mouthedness on the matter of the warp has got us, Russ scoffed.
Sanguinius made a silent gesture of agreement.
Lehman is right, said the Khan. Our seers do not draw directly on the warp. Their gifts are mediated. We know what limits are.
Limits on power, said Dorn. Power has no limits. Every morsel of power engenders more hunger. It is never satisfied. A man's soul needs to be a fortress.
Not limits of power, Rogel, said Jagatai. Our limits are those of human wisdom. You look for enlightenment in the wrong place. Wisdom is the limit that must be observed.
So now humility can tame the powers of the warp, said Dorn. This is ridiculous.
Humility is one of the ways, said Jagatai. Our father is a psyker. So is Sanguinius and Malkador.
The enemy fears the warp as much as they plunge themselves into it, said Lehman Russ. We must use it.
He held up his hands.
Safely, to help us win this war.
I still name you hypocrite. How can you stand it, Jagatai? He opposed you at Nicaea.
That was then, this is now.
Dwelling on the past will solve nothing, said the Khan. We must stand united.
Dorn shook his head.
Whatever your intentions on Fenris may be, they are unimportant to the defense of Terra. What concerns me is that you will not be here where Father needs you.
If it is for Father to decide where I should be and where I should not, why isn't he here?
Russ looked around, as if the Emperor of Mankind might be hiding behind the drapes.
What is he doing in the dungeon?
Dorn hung his head.
I do not know.
I think perhaps you might, said Russ. You do. And you do too. Don't you, Malkador?
The regent said nothing.
You won't tell us. I tell you what, said Russ. If our father himself comes forth and commands me to remain, and tells me that my decided course will end in disaster, then I will stay.
Russ stood up, threw his arms out, and shouted to the ceiling.
Do you hear that, Father? Can you hear me? I plead for guidance.
He cocked his head dramatically to one side, then let his arms drop.
Nothing, Russ whispered. He says nothing. So I will go. Forgive me, my brothers. I have preparations to make. I wish you good fortune with your great master at Beta Garmon.
Russ took up his spear and strode from the room.
Lehman!
Shouted Dorn, his face turning red.
Lehman! Come back!
He launched himself upwards, scattering data slates, cups and refreshments in his haste to catch his brother. Sanguinius grabbed him by the arm. The charms on his wings rattled as his feathers shifted and settled.
Let him be. There are many ways to serve our lord in this war, said Sanguinius. Malkador stood, sighing at the cracking in his joints.
Listen to Sanguinius, Dorn. Let Russ tread his own path, said Malkador.
He looked through the door Russ had left by.
It is different to yours.